I'd like to just begin with an apology for the casual attire. I have not had a chance to change since Tisha B'Av. I haven't really had much of a chance to sleep since Tisha B'Av either. Not a simcha, but medical necessity demanded that. I was in the hospital overnight. And Baruch Hashem, I have to tell you that you can tell that HaKadosh Baruch Hu really likes all of you, because I left Washington Heights Columbia Presbyterian at 9:06 this morning, and I got here before 9:30. And so you can tell that I slept about an hour and a half. So Baruch Hashem, yeah, that my wife needed a little bit of emergency surgery, and Baruch Hashem, everything went well, and she's recovering, and the doctors hope that she'll be discharged by this afternoon already. So Baruch Hashem, it went as wonderfully as could be expected. So I came basically here straight from the hospital. I didn't have a chance to change. I didn't either have a chance to pick up my sheets of Mari Mekomos for today's shiur, and since it was very much a text-based shiur, I kind of prepared what I'm planning to say right now in the 24-minute car ride that I had. And so you'll have to forgive me if the subject matter is not quite put together with the same craftsmanship as usual, but I trust that it will be informative and entertaining nonetheless. So I wanted to talk a little bit today as an introduction to what I was hoping to talk about this week, about the halachic decision-making process. As you'll see tomorrow, Be'ezras Hashem, when I bring in the sheets of Mari Mekomos, the title will be From the Torah to the Talmud to Today, some insights into the halachic decision-making process. And what I was hoping to do was to present a case study of a very, very small sugya, and taking it from the most basic sources together with all of the research and all of the analysis, and arrive ultimately at a conclusion or a set of conclusions. And as an introduction to that, I think that maybe today we'll talk about the halachic decision-making process in general. And I want to begin by a machlokes, which I think I've quoted perhaps even here once before, between two of my rabbeim. I'll mention them by name. Rabbi Schechter, Rabbi Herschel Schechter, holds that in order to pass in a shaila, a person has to have learned through all of Shas. So that means that if somebody were to ask me a shaila today, I would not be qualified to give them a response until I had reviewed all of Shas to make sure that I was not overlooking any gemaras which possibly are relevant to their question. And until I've gone through all of Shas and made sure that there were no gemaras I was overlooking, so what I'm answering them can't necessarily be considered a psak. So when I heard this for the first time from Rabbi Schechter, I asked him, so how does the Rabbi paskin shilos? The Rabbi one time told me that he's never actually read through all of Shas. He only read through the parts of Shas that Rabbi Soloveitchik told him were important to read through. The parts of Shas that Rabbi Soloveitchik told him to skip, he skipped, and he claims that he has never, ever read them. So how does Rabbi Schechter paskin a shilos? So he gave me an answer. He said he doesn't paskin shilos. He just tells people what he thinks. If he knows what Rabbi Soloveitchik said about it, he tells them what Rabbi Soloveitchik said about it. And if he doesn't know what Rabbi Soloveitchik said about it, so then he tells them what he thinks is the consensus of most poskim who have read through all of Shas before forming an opinion about the subject matter. So basically, he'll either tell them what Rabbi Soloveitchik said about it, he knows that Rabbi Soloveitchik was saying whatever he said being informed by all of Shas, or he has a range of poskim whom he believes read through all of Shas before forming an opinion on whatever the subject matter was, and so he'll tell you what he thinks is a consensus of that group of poskim, and that's how he defines the way that he approaches answering a shaila. In contrast, thank you very much. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech HaOlam Shehakol Nihyeh B'Dvaro.
Amen. Amen.
In contrast to the approach of Rabbi Schechter is the approach of Rabbi Willig. And Rabbi Willig basically says that once you've researched the topic thoroughly, you've gone through all of the primary sources, you follow all the references, the footnotes, the Mesoras HaShas, the Ein Mishpat, the Be'er HaGola on the Shulchan Aruch, the Be'er HaGra, you've looked up all of the important references in the Piskei Tshuva and then followed those back to the Gemaras that that they quote as support for their opinion. Once a person has thoroughly researched the topic, says Rabbi Willig, then they're already competent to give a psak halacha on the topic, and they don't necessarily have to have read through all of Shas as long as they thoroughly research the topic, because presumably the footnotes and the references will lead them to all of those Gemaras that they would have otherwise overlooked. There's such a preponderance of references nowadays that it's very difficult after thoroughly researching the sugya to nonetheless be in neglect of an important or critical detail. Now, I happen to think that this machlokes is actually a machlokes of two girsaos in the Gemara and Maseches Horios, daf beis amud beis. At the risk of misquoting it, I will try to do it from memory, and Mr. Ben Chaviv will bring me a Gemara, and we'll be able to check whether I got it right or whether I did not get it right. But in the beginning of Maseches Horios, the Gemara talks about the different levels of competence for paskin halacha, and there's a concrete nafgamina that the Gemara offers in terms of these different levels of competence, and that is that a person who is ra'oi, who's suitable to issue a psak halacha, if he does something which goes against his halachic sensibilities, if he does something which he believes his research led him to conclude was forbidden, but he does it anyhow because the Beis Din, the majority of sages of the Sanhedrin HaGadol, told him that it was permitted and that he should do it, so he's not mitztarif to the majority of Klal Yisrael in bringing a special carbon par halim davar shel tzibur. If a person who's competent to paskin does an aveira against his own halachic sensibilities, but because the Sanhedrin HaGadol instructed him to do it, so he must bring an ordinary carbon chatos the same way that any individual who sins alone, not as part of the collective, not as part of Klal Yisrael, brings an ordinary individual carbon chatos. In contrast, if a person is not higia lehora, he hasn't reached this level of being suitable, of being fit to paskin, and he does an aveira because the Sanhedrin HaGadol instructed him to do that, and he does this aveira together with 51% or more of Klal Yisrael, he does not need to bring an ordinary carbon chatos of an individual, but rather his kapara, his atonement, is covered in the par halim davar shel tzibur, the collective chatas offering that's brought either by Klal Yisrael or by the Sanhedrin to atone for this situation. Thank you very much. Shlomo already brought it. Yes. Zrizim Makdimin. So we have here a very, very easy measuring stick, a litmus test, to determine whether a person is magia lehora, has he reached the level where he's suitable to issue a psak halacha, or whether he's not higia lehora. If he's higia lehora, then if he sins at the instruction of the Beis Din, he brings a chatas yachid. If he's not higia lehora, and he sins by instruction of the Beis Din, he is covered by the par halim davar shel tzibur. So the Gemara has a discussion in this context of who is considered to be higia lehora. What exactly is the dividing point? And here, the language of the Gemara is, we'll just find it in just a second. Tell you the terms as I'm looking for them. The Gemara talks on the one hand about the person who is gamir velo savir. Gamir velo savir means that he has all of the intellectual tools. If you give him the resources, you give him a source sheet, you give him a booklet of sources, he's able to put together, to synthesize the sources and to arrive at the proper conclusion. but he doesn't have the research skills to find all the sources on his own. That is a gamir velo savir. He's not a savir, indicates that he has a tradition, that he received all of the oral traditions, right, from his rebbeim, all of the statements of Abaye, all the statements of Rava, all the braisos. That's what savir means, and gamir means that he's got a gemara cop, that he knows how to apply gemara logic to derive correct conclusions from the sources that he receives. That's a case of gamir velo savir. The second case is the inverse of gamir velo savir, and that is savir velo gamir. It's a person who has all the sources at his fingertips. He may have 1,000 cases that all belong to a certain group, that all have a conceptual coherence with one another. He has 1,000 cases, and he knows the halacha in all 1,000 of those cases. And therefore, if you basically, there's pretty much no case in this particular area which you can ask him which he will not have an answer to, because he learned the halacha in 1,000 cases. He knows what the halacha is, and those 1,000 cases cover pretty much any circumstance that one might encounter in this field of halacha. But he has not yet mastered the skills, the methodology for in drawing inferences, deductions, and inductions from turning the cases into general principles and then inferring back from the general principles to new cases. And so that's a case of a savir velo gamir, that he has all of the information, 1,000 cases, all in pretty much anything at his fingertips, but he has not yet mastered the methodology that's necessary to generalize from those 1,000 cases to the 1,001st case. The Gemara in Horios Daf Beis Amud Beis says, "Ra'uy lehora'a, a person who is fit to paskin halacha, mimishna yisera, from these two extra words in the Mishnah, it's teaching you afilu gamir velo savir, a person who has a methodology but lacks the sources, has to bring a chatas yachid, even if he sins together with most of Klal Yisrael at the instruction of the Sanhedrin Agadol, and savir velo gamir, a person who's got all the sources but lacks a methodology. Again, if he sins, he goes against, he knows it's one of the cases, and the halacha says this, and the Sanhedrin tells him not this, he does the Aveira, he brings a chatas yachid, according to the Gemara, our girsa of the Gemara in Horios, on Daf Beis Amud Beis. However, if you look, most Gemaras, the Hagos HaBach, are printed on the margins on the side of the page. And so they're very easy to spot when the Bach has a comment. In Horios, it happens to be that the Hagos HaBach are not printed on the side of the page. So if you're trying to look up, right, and double check what I'm about to quote to you, don't expect to find it on the side of the page. Don't expect to find a little Rashi letter in parentheses bracketing this Hagos HaBach. You have to actually go to the back of the Masechta, just like you have to do for other Hagos, for the Rashash, for the Marsha. In the back of Maseches Horios, on the last page, you can see that underneath the Gemara, you have the Hagahot Agra and the Hagahot HaBach on the bottom, and they don't tell you on the pages that there are such Hagos. You just have to know to look at the end of the Masechta. And here the Hagos HaBach says, he changes the Girsa. He reads, Mimishna Yisera, Afilu Gamir Velo Savir Ra'uy Lehora'a. A person who has the methodology, even if he lacks the sources, is considered to be a ra'uy lahora'a. But, says the Bach, tevot savir velo gamir nimhak. Those the Bach sees fit to erase, they don't belong there. So in other words, the Bach says a person may have mastered the halacha in 1,000 cases, but if he doesn't have the methodology to generalize from the 1,000 to the 1,001st, he is not considered ra'ui lahora'a.
This person who said savir velo gamir, is he these 1,000 cases that he knows? He heard the psak from others and therefore is able to repeat them?
Yeah.
He's not deriving them himself. It's just that he's heard, he knows this is the halacha in this case from something he's heard. He didn't come to on his own conclusion.
Right. Meaning even the person who's a gamir, so he needs to start from somewhere. He needs to have a certain critical mass of cases with which to apply his induction and deduction. You take 6 cases, 3 of them the halacha is mutter, three of them the halacha is asur, you try to figure out there's two passable common denominators between the two groups, and then there's a seventh case which has one common denominator with one group and one common denominator with a second group, and the question is which group is it most similar to, and that you need both a methodology and a certain base of sources. But you can do that, you can apply that methodology, as the Gemara does on many, many occasions, from a very limited number of cases, and if you've got the right methodology, you can generalize from a sufficiently large number of cases, even if it's not a massively large number of cases. So that's, I don't think anyone can just do it off the cuff like that. The Netziv talks about it. The Netziv says that that in the times of the Beis HaMikdash, the first Beis HaMikdash, in Eretz Yisrael, there was a special Siyata Dishmaya. There was a special Siyata Dishmaya, and this Siyata Dishmaya enabled the people who were immersed in purity and who spent their lives in the quest for figuring out the Ritzon Hashem, it enabled them to intuit what the proper halacha was. And the Netziv writes that that was the methodology of Psak Halacha in that time, in that place, because there was a special Siyata Dishmaya that affected the Morei Horah. That doesn't mean that there's not Siyata Dishmaya nowadays, just that the Siyata Dishmaya requires more human effort in order to be implemented. There's a story with the Chasam Sofer about it, which I'm not going to mention now, but the Netziv says that there was a time when Halacha was generated by this divine inspiration, by this intuition, by this Siyata Dishmaya. But, says the Netziv, when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, the Aron was hidden away, so we lost that level of Siyata Dishmaya, and it became impossible to derive Halacha without some sort of a precedent, without some sort of a tradition going back to the previous generations. Now, even in those times, we had Halacha L'Moshe Misinais, we had Psukim, we had Drashos, but at the same time, it was considered a valid way of arriving at a halachic conclusion, of adding something to the structure, right, of Halacha and to the number of primary sources that future generations would have to deal with, to paskin based on this Siyata Dishmaya. That we don't necessarily have anymore, but the Netziv says that we had it at one point in time.
When one passes today, I obviously don't have time to know it, but if we just like we want to interface that, when the Rav passes, is he really passing from the Gemara or is he passing from Achronim?
Depends which Rav is.
Yes, you're right.
Depends which Rav is. It's a much bigger sugi, and I don't want to get too sidetracked, but there's, for instance, a prohibition of paskening in the same place as your Rebbe. There's a prohibition against paskening when you're drunk. There's a prohibition against paskening under certain other circumstances as well. And the question is, what counts as a psak for those prohibitions? So in general, let's say that the answer is an explicit Mishnah Brura. So that does not count as psak. A person can say the Mishnah Brura says this, even if his Rabbi is right in front of him, as long as it's not going to hurt his Rebbe's feelings. He's allowed to say, just look at Mishnah Brura, simin this, if that, even if he's drunk, because what he's doing is not paskening, he's just giving a marimakum to the person who's asking him the question. He's not taking it on his own shoulders to say that I take responsibility for the consequences of your actions. What he's saying is that the Mishnah Brura already took responsibility for the consequences of your actions. That's why I think it doesn't work to give a marimakum to one of these kitzur svarim, which very often, not the kitzur Shulchan Aruch, but a lot of contemporary kitzur svarim, come with a disclaimer in the front, which says, not to be relied upon for halacha l'maisa, and even though people very often rely upon them halacha l'maisa, right, but you have to know that you're taking it on your own shoulders. The author of the Sefer refused to take it on his shoulders, and so if you want to say this is, you could say marimakum, that this person thought that when he was learning that this was the halacha, but that he took it on his shoulders, no. You're not taking it on your shoulders, you're drunk. He's not taking it on his shoulders because he didn't want the responsibility. And so if you're giving a person a marimakum in one of these svarim, it basically means that, somebody did his research and thought that this might be the conclusion, but wasn't certain enough to take responsibility for it.
What if he's unethical and a crook?
What if who's a crook? It's a different discussion.
Yeah.
Different discussion. I'm not even going to comment on whether that statement is correct or incorrect. But No, it's a question that if a person, I mean, I personally don't know any Rabbanim like that, and I'm very reluctant, you know, to accept, you know, reports from other people. To be choshesh, we're choshesh, right? To the extent that we're allowed to or supposed to be choshesh, but at the same time, to be mekabel, I certainly cannot be mekabel, and that's you know, subject to all of the conditions you know, set forth in Sefer Chafetz Chaim. So I it's an interesting hypothetical circumstance if a person has, you know, has direct experience with such a thing, and it really belongs to a different topic. So sorry, now we're on like our third tangent from a tangent. So let's just I trust that all the tangents are interesting, but I'd like them all to cohere as well. So yeah, so there is such a thing as a psak halacha, where halacha says that this is a psak, and then there's also such a thing as a marim makom, where the halacha says that this is not your taking responsibility for the outcome, the consequences of a person's action. It's some earlier rabbi, it's the Chasam Sofer, it's the Mishneh Brura, it's the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, who's taking responsibility for that person's actions, and that in general we don't consider to have the status of a psak halacha. So definitely it's true that sometimes, and this is the case most often, because arriving at a psak, as Rabbi Schachter and Rabbi Willig both agree, takes intensive research. The only dispute between them is how intensive the research has to be. But they both agree that it takes very intensive research, and so when a person gets a shayla, most often they're not going to have the luxury or the opportunity of going through all the research. If they've already researched the sugya themselves, as Rabbi Forst says, they'll just paskin based on the results of the last time they researched the sugya. But if they have not yet researched the sugya themselves and the situation calls for an answer, then either they will call up their rabbi and they'll ask that question, or they will look in the Mishneh Brura or the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch or a similar sefer, and they'll give you a marim makom. They'll say, look, I haven't researched the sugya myself. This is all goes without saying, but it's basically what's being said. I haven't researched the sugya myself, right? But the fact is, the Mishneh Brura researched the sugya and he arrived at this conclusion. The Mishneh Brura is certainly a rabbi who's even more reliable than I am, and therefore, go ahead and rely on the Mishneh Brura. I'm not taking it on my shoulders. I'm just telling you that the Mishneh Brura already took it on his shoulders. And so I would say that that yes, most psak has to go back to primary sources to an extent. There definitely is something which most people think of as psak, which only goes to one or two achronim. Is it possible to paskin from achronim without researching the gemaras? Is a more complicated question, and I think it depends on how familiar a person is with the Gemara. And I'll tell you why in just a second. So we've encountered now the Gamir Velo Savir, person who has got the methodology but not the sources, and the Savir Velo Gamir, the person who's got the sources, not the methodology. The Gemara seems to say, argus of the Gemara seems to say, that if you have a sufficiently wide number of sources, that already is sufficient for issuing a psak halacha, as opposed to the Bach says, if you got the methodology, even if you got no sources, a person will give you the six sources, you'll crunch the numbers, and then you'll arrive at the prop psak halacha, so you're considered to be higia lehora. But if you have a 1,000 sources and you don't know how to generalize to the 1,001st, so that's going to be worthless. That person is no better than a person who knows only one halacha in one case, or no halachas in no cases. Okay, go ahead, let me hear.
He's the one that
has zero mitzvot pil pulo.
Yeah, he brings 3,000 halachot back.
Right, but
that was definitely.
But everyone agrees that if you have the methodology, that you're considered higia lehora. The only machlokas is, what if you don't have the methodology? Which is interesting, because it seems to be a kasha on Rabbi Schachter that we have to resolve. The Rabbi Schachter says that if you haven't gone through all of Shas before you answer the shayla, so then you're missing something. And here it sounds like if you have the methodology, so we have to figure out. I think that there are a number of possible resolutions, but it's definitely clear that you have this idea. Methodology alone is enough, but the question is, are sources alone enough? And you have to check out, if you look in the Hakdama, there Rabbi Ovadia Yosef writes to the Tshuvos Yabia Omer, Volume 1, the introduction. So he seems to feel very much that the proper approach to halachic decision-making is just compiling the largest list of cases and halachos that you possibly can. Read through every single Rishon, read through every single Achron, and compile an exhaustive list of every single possible case that could arise, and what is the halacha in that case. Okay, if you find one halacha, you'll find in the Tshuvas Rashba, another halacha you'll find in Tshuvas Chasam Sofer, a third case, and its halacha you'll find in Tshuvas Afraska Daniel. Wherever you look, just go through millions of Tshuvas Svarim and compile an exhaustive list of all the cases and all the halachos, and that seems to be the methodology that Rebbe Ovadia is advocating, which is the methodology, it seems almost, of Savir Velo Gamir. You just read through lots and lots of things that earlier people wrote and compile an exhaustive list. That's what he sees. I think that Rebbe Ovadia assumes that by the time that you've read through all of these Svarim, compiling your list, you'll have gotten at least a little bit of an idea about how to be Madame and Milsa and Milsa, and how to compare a new case to the old cases. But, I read this one time in a Sefer. It says, I'm about to write something, it's page like 400 and something in the Sefer, I'm about to write something which Chazal say you should never tell to an Am Haaretz, but I trust that if you're up to this page already, you're no longer an Am Haaretz. So we have these two different paradigms. There's an interesting tshuva of the Rashbash. The Rashbash was the son of the Tashbetz, and the Tashbetz was one of the later Gedolim in Spain before the expulsion. The Rashbash was the son of the Tashbetz. And the Rashbash writes the following story. He says he one time met an old man in Barcelona, and this old man told him about the curriculum that he followed for learning Torah. So the first thing that he did was that he learned through all 14 books of the Rambam's Yad HaChazakah Be'iyun. But Be'iyun for him didn't mean researching the sources of the Rambam. It meant that he tried to figure out what the significance was of every word of the Rambam simply by reading the Rambam without tracing the Rambam back to its sources. Then when he finished learning the Rambam with that methodology, he decided that now he's going to go and learn Gemara. Big mistake. And he realized that it was a big mistake. He said that by the time that he encountered the Rashbash, he had learned two Siddarim of Gemara, in addition to the 14 books of the Rambam's Yad HaChazakah. He had learned two Siddarim of Gemara, and he realized that all of the Psakim of the Rambam that had been based on those two Psakim, on those two Siddarim of Gemara, he had misunderstood when he had read through the Rambam. And now that he was reading the Gemaras upon which the Rambams were based, he had a different understanding of the Rambam, which perhaps was at odds with his initial understanding of the Rambam. And so therefore he was warning the Rashbash. He said, nobody should pursue my curriculum. Don't read Rambam before the Gemara, or don't read Rambam separate from the Gemara. If you want to understand the Rambam, if you want to understand the Rambam's halachos, they can only be properly understood when one understands the Gemaras on which they were based. There's a similar example in early modern Jewish history, that there were a number of yeshivos, I don't know the names, before the Litvish yeshivos became very prominent, there were other yeshivos. I'm not sure whether they were offshoots of Volozhin or whether they came from a tradition that was different from the tradition of Volozhin, but in these yeshivos, the approach to studying Shulchan Aruch was to study the Shulchan Aruch together with the commentaries of the Taz or the Magen Avraham or the Shach, whichever the commentaries were on the side, and to basically approach those Shulchan Aruch and the commentaries before seeing the Gemaras and without seeing the Gemaras at the same time as reading the Shulchan Aruch. And their approach of those yeshivos generated a lot of controversy and a lot of opposition amongst most of the other yeshivos, because the claim was that these people were distorting the intention, the meaning of the Shulchan Aruch by trying to interpret the Shulchan Aruch as an independent entity, separate and apart from the Gemaras upon which the Shulchan Aruch is based. That's why the Beis Yosef is critical. The Beis Yosef will always show you when there is a Gemara on which the Shulchan Aruch is based. The Beis Yosef will show it to you. The Be'er HaGola sometimes will enhance. He'll bring more Gemaras, sometimes that are not quoted by the Beis Yosef. But it's very hard to tell when you're reading the Beis Yosef. The Beis Yosef will quote a Gemara, then he'll quote 100 Rishonim. So the Be'er HaGola read through the 100 Rishonim and the sources in Gemara upon which the Rishonim were based, he'll sometimes bring down. And so it can be misleading. You'll find a source in the Be'er HaGola which is absent from the Beis Yosef, but if you check further, you'll discover that the Be'er HaGola just read the Rishonim that the Beis Yosef quoted and quoted you the Gemaras which were the sources of those Rishonim. And that applies even more for the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon will very often quote Gemaras that the Shulchan Aruch, that the Beis Yosef does not quote, and very often those Gemaras will be based on the sources of the Rishonim which are quoted in the Beis Yosef or which address the same questions as the Rishonim quoted in the Beis Yosef. With the Vilna Gaon, you do find sometimes that he'll really come from left field, he'll quote a source that that the Beis Yosef didn't quote, and that it seems that the Rishonim the Beis Yosef quoted didn't quote, totally out of left field, and one has to know what to do with the Vilna Gaon. Is that an argument with the Beis Yosef, or is he saying that the is like the Beis Yosef but for a different reason? And what happens if there's a nafkamina between the source of the Vilna Gaon and the source of the Beis Yosef and the Shulchan Aruch? The halach and Shulchan Aruch is the same either way, but depending on the source, if there's a different case which slightly differs from the case in the Shulchan Aruch, so the Vilna Gaon would say one way and the Shulchan Aruch would say a different way, so one has to know what to do under those circumstances. But for the most part, it's critical to base an understanding of the Sifrei Halacha on an understanding of the Gemara which the Sifrei Halacha were building from. And even if you say, as Rabbi Willig writes in one of his articles, that the approach of Poskim for many generations was to read through the Poskim of the previous generation and apply the rulings of those Poskim to the new circumstances that arose one generation away, this doesn't mean to the exclusion of going through the sources in the Gemara. I think it means with an understanding that those poskim were based on earlier poskim, and ultimately the earliest of poskim either are based on the Gemara, and if they're not based on the Gemara, what are they based on? The chain has to go back all the way to the Gemara. Now I find it difficult to understand how a person who doesn't understand how the chain evolved, meaning that the Gemara said this, and the first, Sefer of Tshuvos said this, and the second Sefer of Tshuvos said that, and the third one said a third thing based on the works of the first two. If a person doesn't understand how that chain evolved, it's very, very difficult to apply the last link in the chain properly, to forge a new link to connect to the last link, because how do you know that you're really doing that in a way which remains true to the spirit of the Gemara upon which this whole chain is founded? So the answer is going to be that some people either have such a grasp of Gemara that they can tell from the last link exactly where in the Gemara it came from. There's a Gemara in Shabbos that sounds that way. The Gemara in Shabbos seems to say that if a person is paskening, person is only considered to be suitable to pasken halacha. Actually, it doesn't say suitable to pasken halacha. The Gemara in Shabbos says a person is only suitable to be a town rabbi, to be the rabbi of a town, if he can tell you the source in Gemara for any given halacha. You tell him, the Shulchan Aruch says this, he can tell you the source in the Gemara. In other words, he can write a Be'er HaGola himself. He can write the Vilna Gaon sources of the Shulchan Aruch himself, and that's what qualifies a person to be the rabbi of a town. According to the Gemara in Shabbos, it's around Daf Kuf Yod Dalet, according to some interpretations there. So there are some people who either have such a firm grounding in the Gemara that from the last link in the chain they can already intuit where the foundation is in the Gemara, right? Or it's got to be that these people just have such a chush, and again it's also a hard thing to say, that they have such a chush for how to apply from the last link to, because their Rebbe taught them how to do it. Their Rebbe taught them, so they may not know exactly where in the Gemara it is, but the Rebbe taught them a foolproof logarithm for deriving the halacha in our day from the way that the Poskim wrote about the halacha in the previous day. So this is all the necessity of reading Gemara together together with reading the Sifrei Halacha, together with reading the Shulchan Aruch, together with reading the Kitzur, together with reading whatever Sefer of Shailos Utshuvos or whatever summary Sefer one is reading. The Marsha in Maseches Sota talks about this a little bit as well. The Gemara in Sota talks about a group of people who are called Morim Halacha Mitoch Mishnatam, people who pass in Halacha based on their Mishnah. The Marsha says a Mishnah is a genre. Mishnah is not the name of a particular book. It's not the name of the book that was authored or edited by Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, but rather it's a name of a genre. And the genre of Mishnah is characterized by the following characteristics. Number one, it's concise. Number two, it's written in a language which was the vernacular at the time of its composition. And number three, it contains halacha lemaisa and doesn't go on long tangential discussions or even on discussions in quest of the halacha lemaisa, which take an inordinate amount of time. So the three characteristics of the genre of Mishnah, this is what the Marsha seems to imply, the Rashbash and the Tshuva that I mentioned earlier says the same thing. If you look at the introduction of the Tosfos Yontif to his commentary on the Rosh, the beginning of Maseches Brachos, he also seems to say something similar. It's an idea that the late Professor Twersky also wrote an article about. Yes.
According to that, the Mishnayos don't fit that characterization. It's not halacha lemaisa.
Not anymore.
He put in both or all alternative points of view that are not necessarily halacha lemaisa.
Just like the Shulchan Aruch. But the Tosafta in Idios, or the Mishnah in Idios, says that he put in the alternative points of view because if a later generation, and there's reasons why he put it in, and sometimes the reasons that he put it in was to tell you that if you encounter somebody who says, I have a tradition that this is the halacha, you can tell him, yeah, but your tradition comes from one opinion and that was outnumbered by 100 opinions, and so it's there that you should know that it's only one opinion and it was outnumbered by 100. So those are the three reasons that the Mishnah in Idios gives for Rebbe's including the Shitot Hayachid. The Shulchan Aruch also has reasons for including Shitos that he doesn't accept, and that doesn't mean that it's not halacha lemaisa. Those shitot yachid are necessary for properly understanding and implementing the halacha lemaisa.
But it's not halacha lemaisa.
Right, it's not. And there's a question when the Gemara says Beis Shammai, B'makum Beis Hillel, ain't a Mishnah. So it may indicate that there are parts of the book Mishnah which don't necessarily belong to the genre Mishnah, which is something which needs to be thought about at greater length. But that's how I understood. I understand Beis Shammai, B'makum Beis Hillel, ain't a Mishnah. It means that it's not part of the genre because Beis Shammai is just not halacha lemaisa. So the Marsha says that there's this genre of Mishnah which doesn't give you the background that was necessary to arrive at the halacha. It just pretty much gives you cases and halachos, cases and halachos. Sometimes it'll give you conflicting opinions about the halachos, but for the most part, it's too concise to give you the background and the thought processes that led up to the determination of this halacha. And therefore, says the Marsha, that a person who is moreh halacha, mitoch Mishnato, is considered to be destroying the world, because there's no way that he's going to get it right 100% of the time, or even close to 100% of the time. The only guarantee, not a guarantee, but at least the only way to ensure the highest probability of getting it right in the highest number of cases is to understand the thought processes that informed and that enabled in the times of the Mishnah, the Tanaim, to arrive at their conclusions, and thereby to apply those same thought processes to arrive at our own conclusions. The Marsha therefore says, in a critique against what I mentioned from certain early modern yeshivos, he says people who pass in halacha based on the Shulchan Aruch without looking at the sources of the Shulchan Aruch, and here I'll add on in brackets, or at least without a foolproof logarithm for deriving something that'll be consistent with the sources, or without enough familiarity with the sources to know that their application is not going against the sources of the Shulchan Aruch, says the Marsha, they're destroying the world because they're running too high of a risk of paskining halacha the wrong way. The Gemara, it also happens to be the Gemara at the end of Horios, and it talks about this idea that a person who knows many, many halachos is greater, more suitable for positions, for teaching positions, for positions of authority, than a person who simply has a foolproof methodology. It's more important to have mastered the sources than it is to have mastered the methodology. And the Gemara says that there was a dispute, not a dispute, but there was a question that arose when there was a vacancy in the position of the Rosh Yeshiva of one of the yeshivos in Bavel, and Maybe it's a Gemara someplace else, because here the Gemara seems to conclude with Teku, but there is a Gemara someplace else, which maybe it's an earlier Gemara on this page. Here it is. It says, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. There's a machlokas between Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel and the Chachamim. Chad Amar Sinai Adif, a person who just have all the traditions, all the oral traditions that came down from Har Sinai, he's better. The Chad Amar Oker Harim Adif, and the second one says that the uprooter of mountains, the one who's able to contrast and compare and grind the mountains together and figure out which one is heavier, that's the one who's better. In other words, the Sinai represents the person who just knows the cases and the halachos, and the Oker Harim represents a person who the balance of his wisdom, the balance of his intellectual energy is invested in the methodology rather than in the acquisition of new source material. And on that, the Gemara asks, it's a machlokes, who's adif? Chad Amar Sinai adif, Chad Amar Oker Harim adif. The Gemara says, Rav Yosef was the personification of the Sinai approach. Rabbah was the personification of the Oker Harim approach. Shalchu l'taman, they sent a shayla to Eretz Yisrael, Ezame and Kodem, which one takes precedence? Shalchu l'hu Sinai Adif, that Sinai is better. The mastery of sources is more important than the mastery of methodology. If a person has to split his energy, the balance should be devoted to mastering the sources. The Amar Mar hakol tzrichin l'marei chitaya, that everybody needs the seller of wheat. The wheat is a mashal, it's a metaphor for the sources, and even the Oker Harim, if he doesn't have sources to work with, is not going to be able to do anything, and therefore there's a greater necessity for the Sinai, for the Baal HaChitim, there's more necessity for him than there is for the Oker Harim, and therefore, if we're going to determine who has precedence in terms of being a teacher, who has precedence in terms of having their research receive federal grants, so it should be the Sinai rather than the Oker Harim. However, this Gemara inspires a tremendous dispute, because the Gemara was written in a time before the oral tradition, before the Torah Shebaal Peh, was committed to writing. And therefore, if we didn't have people who passed on the traditions, this is the case, this is the halacha, this is the case, this is the halacha, from one generation to the next, if people were to neglect the study of the sources in favor of the study of methodology, then eventually knowledge of the sources would dwindle to the point when there wouldn't even be enough sources to sustain the practice of the methodology. And therefore, in Eretz Yisrael, they said, Sinai Adif, because even the Oker Harim won't be able to survive, his methodology will be worthless if the sources are allowed to deteriorate and fall into disuse. However, Reb Shlomo Kluger, and it's very notable based on those who know Reb Shlomo Kluger's personality and methodology, that Reb Shlomo Kluger says this halacha is not true anymore once the Gemara was committed to writing. Because once the Gemara is committed to writing, every single source that a person could possibly need for deriving the halacha, the Amoraim made sure that it was included in the Gemara. And hence, there's no longer a concern that those sources are going to be forgotten. Even if people invest all of their energy in the pursuit of a more and more and more accurate methodology, the Gemara will still be there. As long as people know how to read the Gemara, which is a methodological skill, they'll be able to gather all of the evidence that they need for paskening any shayla. And therefore, says Rav Shlomo Kluger, once the Gemara was committed to writing, right, once the canon was sealed, if we're to use fancier language, says Rav Shlomo Kluger, that there no longer is any precedence for Sinai, and just the opposite, the Oker Harim, the perfection of methodology is more critical than the acquisition of sources. That's the Egle Tal, I think it's the Egle Tal, in his justification for the slow pace that the yeshivos in his time already pursued in their studies, and certainly all the more so nowadays. Nowadays, it's a big controversy. A lot of Rosh Yeshiva, particularly Rav Shach used to yell about it. He said, "We have to move quicker. We have to move more quickly." And someone once asked the present Rosh Yeshiva of Panovich, Rabbi Edelstein, said, "Why don't you yell like Rav Shach yelled that we have to move more quickly?" Said, "If Rav Shach yelled about it his whole life and didn't succeed in speeding up the pace, then I'm not going to waste my energy on it. If Rav Shach couldn't accomplish it, I'm not going to accomplish it either." But the fact is that so there are some Rosh Yeshiva like Rav Shach and Rav Edelstein and many, many others who advocate setting a very, very swift pace. However, the Egli Tal defended the slow pace that the yeshivas pursued. Now, we have to understand that the slow pace in the times of the Egli Tal is not the same as the slow pace nowadays. If you look at the reports of the yeshivos in Lita, you'll discover that they learned, like if you just, I one time read a history of Yeshiva Shara Torah in Grodno. It said that the curriculum there was 7 blat a week b'kiyus and 5 blat a week b'iyun. That was the curriculum. The weekly curriculum was 12 blat, 7 b'kiyus, and 5 b'iyun. So it's very, very different than what's pursued in yeshivos nowadays, but the Egli Tal felt that whichever yeshivas he was dealing with were moving slower than they should have moved, and he wrote to defend it, to justify it, and he said that nowadays it's more important to master the methodology than it is to master the breadth of Shas, because once a person knows how to read Shas, they can get all of the sources that they need at their leisure, but there's only a certain amount of time when they have access to the Rebbeim and to the quality of Chevra and Pilpul Chaveirim that's necessary to acquire the methodology, and therefore, writes the Egli Tal, that the acquisition of methodology has to take priority in his time rather than the covering of ground and the acquisition of sources. So that's consistent with what Reb Shlomo Kluger writes, that when we say Sinai Adif, that Sinai is better, that was only talking about the times of the Gemara, when the Torah Shebaal Peh was not committed to writing. But nowadays it's committed to writing. There's no danger of the sources falling into disuse and deteriorating and being lost to us, and therefore it's clear that Oker Harim is better. In contrast, the same introduction of Reb Ovadia Yosef to his tshuvos, to the Abia Omer, so he quotes this Gemara in Horios, Kipshuto, and he says that everyone has to understand that the Paskin and the Gemara Horios, that Sinai is Adif, and therefore the balance of a person's energies should be spent in the acquisition of new sources. If they read through the Gemara, they should read through the Rishonim. If they read through the commentaries of the Rishonim, I don't remember if this is particularly the order that he says to go in, but basically something along those lines, read through the tshuvos of the Rishonim, then read through the tshuvos of the Akronim, then read through the contemporary tshuvos. When you finish all the contemporary tshuvos, well, go to a library that has more contemporary tshuvos that you haven't seen yet and read those.
The DVD.
You get
the DVD.
Ozar HaChochma. Yeah.
The machlokes between Yorvadei, is it based on the machlokes? Yeah. I understand that it's a different situation. I've heard that it's somewhat based on the machlokes.
I think I one time thought that it was based on this machlokas also. I don't remember whether I changed my mind about it or not. So I have to ask me when my memory is better whether I still think that that it's based on this machlokas.
But the Oker Harim is like, is it called Iyun today? I'm trying to understand you. Oker is Iyun and the other one is Iyun?
Some people do Iyun right and some people do Iyun wrong. So I would say that that Oker Harim is the right way of doing Iyun.
The Marsha is the way of the, I mean, like simple way, but the Marsha is the Parsha Pshat, and the he didn't delve into a certain mind of something, like a certain mind, like the Marsha is an example of some kind of not Oker Harim that much. I learned something like that.
The mind of the Marsha. What? How would I characterize that?
I heard that they mentioned him by name. He had a certain kind of mind and a certain.
Right. It's interesting. If you want to talk about the approaches and the methodologies of different achronim, so the place I would start is to talk about what they said in Volozhin, that the Nitziv was the Pashtan, You would just, you know, go through the Gemaras and say pshat in the Gemaras, and the Beis Halevi was the mefalpel, and he was the one who would do all these fancy things. Now, if you look at the writings of the Netziv, you look at the writings of the Beis Halevi, sometimes it's difficult, you know, they do things in a little bit of a different way, but there are many, many similarities between them. The Marshal was a real pashtan. What the Marshal made it his business to do was to basically ask, what does this line of Tosfos mean? I'm reading a line of Tosfos, there's a difficulty in understanding of Tosfos, I just want to know how to read the line of Tosfos. And so I'm going to comment, I'm going to explain the way to read Tosfos in a manner which is most consistent with, number one, the language that Tosfos uses, number two, the context of the Tosfos, and number three, the opinions of the Balei Tosfos overall. All of these are just devoted, there are three tools that the Marshal uses to understand what is the meaning of the line of Tosfos in front of him. If you look at the Beis Halevi will take something from one Gemara, he'll take something from a second Gemara, he'll say, okay, let's analyze all of the points of similarity between the two, all the points of difference between the two. It's much more of a, it's much less of a text-based approach in terms of just interpreting and commenting on the text, and it's much more an approach which compares and contrasts the ideas which are imparted by the text, not so much just explaining the text, but much more. The Netziv does that as well. And so when we say that the Netziv was a Pashtun, I don't think we mean that the Netziv was a Pashtun the same way that the Marshal was a Pashtun, unless the Netziv had a different methodology in Shir than he did in his Sfarim. Well, the truth is that if you compare the Hamik She'ila on the She'iltos with the Meromi Sada, there are a number of significant differences. The Meromi Sada, which is a Netziv's commentary on Shas, is much more in the style of the Marshal. There are a few notable differences, but if you take the Meromi Sada as being the origin of that comment about the Netziv's approach, then it makes a lot of sense. There's a Pashtanut over there, because what the Netziv does is he tries to explain what the meaning is of the line of Gemara in front of him, and he doesn't try to compare five different Gemaras and say, like, okay, what's, you know, this one, that one, the other one. He's trying to explain the line of Gemara in front of him.
I just wanted to note that the Marsha, you have the Agudas Agadata, which is essentially like a Rashi on Agadata.
Yeah, the Agados.
That's pshat. That's basically.
The Agados Marsha is also pshat. It's slightly different from the halachos of the Marsha, but in essence, it's really a commentary on the text. Now, you also have to differentiate, because when the Achronim wrote Tshuvos, so they're obviously not commenting on the text, but you can talk also about a Sefer of Tshuvos, which is more based on pshat, and a Sefer of Tshuvos, which is more based on Pilpul, and that also that would require a little bit more elaboration as well as to what that means, because it's not as pashut as saying that, you know, one commentary on Gemara focuses on the interpretation of the words, and another commentary on the Gemara focuses much more on situating the ideas that evoked by the Gemara in a broader context of ideas. So,
at the fundamental level, that's rational. Rashi gives pshat in this Gemara. Tosfos is looking at how this Gemara fits into pshat.
Yeah.
That's really.
Tosfos will bring other Gemaras that relate to this Gemara.
Very, you don't find that often Rashi bringing other Gemaras.
Yeah, that's definitely true.
Interesting.
I'm trying to figure out why it rubs me the wrong way. Tosfos is also more. He's more of a Pashtun than the Beis Halevi is. And we have to figure out, I have to figure out how to formulate, how that is. But definitely one has a sense that Tosfos is much more of a Pashtun than the Beis Halevi is. You have to figure out how to formulate why that's so. Okay, so just bringing everything around to where we started. So I think I kind of got sidetracked. There were a whole bunch of other things I was planning to say as well, but this seems to have taken up most of our hour. Nonetheless, so just basically, what have we seen? That there are these two different approaches. One approach says just read through all of Shas. You can't pass in the Shaila if you haven't read through all of Shas, or if the people whom you're basing yourself on haven't read through all of Shas. The second approach says do your research thoroughly, and as long as you followed all the footnotes and references, etc., so you can a person can be considered higia lehora. We surveyed whether that has relevance to the question of the Mishnah versus Gemara, Morim Halacha Mitoch Mishnatam, which is considered to be a very destructive type of act, as opposed to Morim Halacha Mitoch Gemara, which is considered to be a constructive type of act. We looked a little bit about how that related to the Sinai and the Oker Harim controversy, which one is better, and the question about whether the Gemara's declaration that Sinai is better holds true for all generations, or whether it only held true when the oral tradition was in danger of being forgotten. And I think that more or less sets us up for what I want to start with tomorrow, which is actually demonstrating the methodology of arriving at a halachic conclusion on the basis of the sources, as the way I understand that my rabbeim have taught it to me. And hopefully in the course of that discussion we'll address a whole number of other issues, such as what's the role of divergent opinions in halacha, divergent interpretations of a text, what are the main factors that one tries to look at when determining which opinion is more reliable, which opinion is less reliable, or which opinion is something that one ought to be concerned about as opposed to an opinion that one ought not to be concerned about. I hope to talk also about some more detailed issues of methodology, the question about the admissibility of evidence from one area of halacha into a different area of halacha. When can we say, without any basis, that you can compare the standards and the definitions in two different areas? When is it that you need some sort of a basis for comparing definitions between areas, and when is it that we generally say that the definition of a similar term will be different in two different areas? When is it that we'll look at halacha as much more a set of discrete cases? When is it that we'll try to formulate some sort of a binding principle and then make broad generalizations on the basis of that? So I hope to cover those issues and a host of others over the course of the next week or week plus, and this year is just an unintended introduction.